You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 228, entitled, How to Use Your Mind to Overcome Any Struggle That Comes Your Way, I chat with Morris Brosset. Morris Brosset is a speaker and high-performance mindset coach, and in today's episode, Morris talks about how he helps people overcome some of the most devastating challenges, struggles, and health conditions that most people would consider crippling or irreversible. He talks about how he trains his clients to tap into the power of their minds using meditation, visualization, and breathwork, among other skill sets. Morris dives deep into how to tap into your mind and harness the power to overcome virtually anything that comes your way. If you're wondering how to use your mind to overcome any struggle, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. All right, guys, I have some really good news to announce, and that is the book that I have written over a year and a half ago and have talked about periodically on the podcast about overcoming anxiety, depression, and having unbelievable fucking confidence to do whatever you want in life. That book that I've been holding off on publishing will be published this fall. There isn't an exact date yet, and I probably will release the exact date within the next month or so. But I can tell you this, it will be 100% published this fall. So no bullshit aside, no holding off any longer. I think I've held you guys in the dark on this book for too long already as it is. But I am happy, eager, and proud to announce that this coming fall, you can finally get the book that will change your life, the lives of millions of other men out there, and will just be one of the best fucking books you ever read, guaranteed. So stay tuned for this fall, and also stay tuned for the exact release date, probably coming within the next month or so. In the meantime, continue to listen to this incredible podcast and follow me on Instagram at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. I post all the time throughout the week, whether it's on my stories or whether it's an actual post on my feed. I think you guys will love some of the content I put out there. I'm really loving Instagram personally. It's a lot of fun and it keeps me more interacted and engaged with you guys. So follow me at Justin Stenstrom and of course continue to listen to and watch the YouTube videos at elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube. They're on YouTube, of course, but that link will just forward you right to the link on YouTube and our channel. So elitemanmagazine.com/YouTube, also Instagram at Justin Stenstrom. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Mo Brosset from brosetperformance.com. Mo, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Absolutely, Justin. Thanks for having me, bro.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I know you do a lot of cool stuff. You talk about a lot of topics that is really near and dear to my heart and things that I'm just so fascinated by. And I know you help a lot of people now, a lot of your clients. You help a lot of people now that have anxiety issues, depression issues, mindset issues. And then also even more interesting than that, in my opinion, is people with chronic disease conditions like Parkinson's. And you're really helping change these people's lives. So can you talk just for a moment, maybe take 60 seconds or so and just kind of touch on what it is you do exactly and how you got to that point, man?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I do currently is I'm one of the directors of a nonprofit in Dallas called the Adaptive Training Foundation. And we work with critically injured military veterans and civilians that have amputations, spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injury, and neurological diseases like Parkinson's and stroke. So my job with them is to work with them on mindset techniques to help them overcome limiting beliefs, get over their thoughts that they can't do things, even though, air quote, experts have told them they would never do X, Y, Z again, and really help them live their best life.
Cool. How did you get involved with that nonprofit? Do you have a military background of some sort?
You know, I don't. man, all of my life, I could not wait to join the Marines. And then the last minute kind of diverted to a different route. And, that's the one regret that I do truly have in my life is that I did not serve. But honestly, man, there's no telling where I would have been if I would have, and I damn sure wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a blessing. But I actually got into this position. Our founder, David Vibora, was a guest on a radio show in Dallas that I was co-hosting. And we basically just hit it off. He has a very extensive background. He was actually Mr. Irrelevant in the 2008 NFL draft.
Oh, wow.
Ended up starting six seasons in the NFL, 3-4 the Rams, 3-4 Seattle before getting injured. But anyway, he started this nonprofit where he was helping injured veterans and civilians. And he had a Army gunner come through his program that wanted to do an Ironman triathlon. And at the time, I coached endurance sports. So I coached Ironman and triathletes at that time. And I still do as part of my job. And he had this guy come through who had been blown up by an RPG. He's blind in his right eye. He's deaf and he's missing 3/4 of his left hand. He said, "Hey man, I need your help. This guy wants to do an Ironman. You want to help me?" And I said, "Absolutely. Hell yes." So started helping this guy out and got him through, you know, his first Ironman. He's done several more since then. And that's how it all started. That was in 2015. And I came on and volunteered as a volunteer in the program, which is 9 weeks long. And then in early 2016 came on as one of the directors.
Nice. Cool, man. It sounds like you do some really impressive things, man. And I just got a lot of respect for people like you who do that, and especially nonprofits who kind of go out of their way, and you're not profiting off it, you're not making any money, you're just doing it out of the goodness of your own heart and really changing people's lives, like you mentioned. I mean, some of these people that, you know, come back from the military just have all kinds of issues, and by no fault of their own, they don't really know how to deal with them or how to get over them. And it's, you know, people like you and some of the people doing similar work than what you're doing now that really help them get past that and kind of get back into society and be productive again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, man. No one teaches these men and women how to deal with what they're going to have to do and what they are going to see. And so when they come back, they've got all these things going on in their head, and they just don't feel whole. They've got traumatic brain injury from seeing, you know, the guys in their unit get blown up and killed. Maybe they've been blown up themselves. And it's just they don't know how to deal with that. Plus, they lose a sense of purpose, because when you're in the military, you have mission, you have purpose, you have goals. And then when you get out, you kind of lose these guys and girls lose that sense. So you lose that sense of community and of wholeness and of purpose. And that's when things start to go south. And I'll tell you what, man, honestly, the other side is true as well. And I was actually talking to someone about this today at our foundation. And, you know, it's kind of a blessing. It's a good thing, because now when someone sees a human with an amputee or with an amputation specifically, a lot of times they'll walk up, especially if it's a male, and thank them for their service. Mm. Even though that human might not be, they might've gotten injured in a motorcycle accident, which is a majority of amputees. And they never served in the military. So there's also this, the converse of the military, of civilians that feel like they are less than because they didn't serve in the military. But now they're missing a limb, and everyone that sees them comes up and thanks them for their service. Mm. So we have to deal with that side of it as well.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting, and it is. It's kind of a neat little thing how that works out. Mo, how did you get? What is your background in learning this kind of stuff? Did you have some kind of issue where you overcame, you know, some kind of incredible challenge in your own life? Did you just somehow find this stuff fascinating and helping other people very rewarding, so you just dove into it and maybe studied a lot of literature or did some other trainings? What kind of background do you have in kind of learning mindset and actually helping in the coaching regard to changing people's lives?
Yeah, my background is actually in exercise science and kinesiology. Mm-hmm. I got a degree from Northwestern State in Louisiana and was a strength and conditioning coach and a full-time personal trainer for the first 12 years of my career. And through that, also studied holistic nutrition and natural medicine. So I learned through working with my clients about really how to handle the human being as it relates to their psyche, not just having them lift weights to lose weight or gain muscle. And then same thing with endurance sports. I got into endurance racing in 2000. I did 12 and 24 hour adventure races, and then got into triathlon, and then did a race triathlon strictly for 7 years, including 4 Ironmans, and then switched over to ultramarathon and obstacle course racing. And through coaching those athletes as well, I learned that it's more a lot of the training and a lot of the results aren't as physical as they are psychological. Because you can talk your way out of anything, especially when you're doing something like an Ironman. Because the second you start to doubt yourself and you start to doubt your ability when you've got 140.6 miles to race, then everything starts to fall apart. Your muscles get more fatigued. Everything just gets more exacerbated as far as the difficulty. So you have to really, I've learned to really tap into the ability to talk to my athletes and get them mentally prepared. And I learned that through doing it myself. You know, I was one of the smallest kids in my class. You know, I'm 5'10 now, but when I was a freshman in high school, I was 5'1" and I weighed 102 pounds. Wow. And you know, I was told I wanted to play football, but I was told by everybody, like, you're going to get killed. You're too small. But I did not believe it. I refused to let that sink in. And I did it anyway. Actually won one of the starting receiver positions on the team. And you know, that's just how I operate. I've always had the mindset that whatever I put my mind to, I can achieve. And does that mean it's easy? Hell no. It's hard, but I've been able to overcome it. I've been able to learn from my experiences. And so when I came to work with Adaptive Training Foundation and working with our veterans and civilians, you know, we actually were doing a great job of getting our athletes trained really well. We had amputees that were getting stronger. They were getting more balanced. They were losing weight, you know, and physically they looked great, but mentally they weren't there yet. And it all came to a head after one of our classes. So again, the way our program works is we work with athletes for a 9-week span, and then they're graduated, and then they can come back and work out at our facility for forever. But after that 9 weeks, we always take them on a really cool trip. In this particular trip, we had worked with 15 military veterans, and we went to Tahoe to do adaptive skiing. Came back, had a great time, and then that week, one of our athletes was still in Dallas preparing to go home to Arizona, and he called up one of the other vets, and he said, "Hey, man, I'm not right. I can't do this anymore," and had his pistol in his hand, and our friend heard him rack around in the pistol, ready to, you know, take his life. So thankfully, he was able to talk him down. We got him into treatment, and he's okay now, and he's actually one of our biggest proponents and actually one of our volunteer trainers at the foundation. But for him coming forward and saying, "I'm not right," two other of our veterans that same week said, "Hey, man, I'm not right either. We need to do something." So at that moment, once we got him into treatment and those other two guys stepped forward, we said, "We've got to do something about this." You know, because again, we're making these guys and girls strong as hell, but if we can't make them better human beings outside of the walls of the gym, then we failed at our job, you know, because physical fitness is just one small, minute aspect of life. If you're a veteran with PTS or TBI or a civilian with PTS and TBI, and you can't handle being stuck in traffic, or you can't handle an argument or a tough conversation with your spouse or your kids or your friends without losing it or getting overly stressed, then you're going to make rash decisions. And that's one of the reasons why we have 22 suicides a day. So, you know, we knew that we had to come up with a solution, and that's how we started to, and I had been studying mindset because of studying holistic nutrition. I had started to dive into just a different field of studying mindset, studying behavioral patterns, et cetera, more on the sports psychology side of things. But I was able to use that knowledge and then transition it into working with these individuals.
Yeah, I want to dive into some of the individuals and specifically that you've helped with some pretty amazing stuff as far as I can tell. But first, I mean, you make some great points, by the way, like the mindset, and especially if you're doing things like obstacle course racing or triathlons, and it really comes down to mindset as opposed to just being physically fit. You can see the strongest, toughest guys in the world just can't actually do some of those things because their mindset isn't up to speed with some of those other people. Even actually women. I remember I used to actually date this girl that was incredibly mentally tough, and she used to do those crazy like death races for Spartan race and all that crazy shit where it's like, you know, like days on, like 72 hours straight, just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And she would outperform all of the men, basically all the men, maybe a couple guys that could hang with her, but she would outperform all the men that would do them just because she was so mentally tough. And it was, you know, it was astounding how strong she was in her willpower, not giving up and doing those things. And it comes down to your mindset, man. It really is that important and that strong. And I'm curious to kind of pick your brain on some of the things that you teach some of your clients. What are actually some of these specific mindset techniques or trainings that you have them undergo?
So the first thing we do when we work with our athletes is first we start with the breath, because that is the key to everything. You know, becoming aware of your breathing and your breath patterns. So when you start to feel anxious or stressed or angry, becoming aware of if you're doing that short, quick chest breath, or if you're breathing through your nose and you're doing a relaxed diaphragmatic breathing. And then teaching them the importance on top of that of meditation and visualization. Now, you know, we joke about it too, especially on day one in our program, especially when we have a lot of vets. You know, you get a group of salty veterans that have been blown to shit and back, and you say, hey guys, we're going to go sit in a corner and meditate. And, you know, if they've got middle fingers, they're going to show it to you. And hey, you know, think about it like this, especially when you're talking to a veteran. All you guys like to shoot your weapon, right? You like to go to a range. You like to shoot your ARs or whatever you have, right? And they're like, yes. Okay. Well, you know, when you're aiming down range and you're breathing and you're focused on the target and nothing else matters, I'm like, yeah, that's meditation. Like, oh, and you literally see the light bulb come on. And I say, okay, and here's another example for you. I know you guys like to lift. You know, when you go do a heavy lift or you're about to go into this exercise where you know you've got to focus and you're looking at it and you're staring at the bar or whatever it is and you're breathing, yes, that's meditation. I'm like, oh, okay. Light bulb gets a little bit brighter. So we show them that, look, you're already doing these things. We're just showing you a different way to do it, a better way to apply it to mitigate stress. So we start with that, and we break down that barrier of, you know, it's okay to meditate. So once they get that, then we start with visualizations. We start with helping them understand that it's okay to fail. And regardless of if you are a wounded veteran, a wounded civilian, or an executive, you've got to be okay with failure. And it's because when you're okay with it and you expect it and you know already how to close your eyes and visualize how you're like, what is your language to yourself when you reach the absolute point of failure in either an exercise or you fail in a business decision or whatever the case may be, what are you going to tell yourself? And if you have that script already in your head and you can visualize it and you have been visualizing it as if it's already happened, then when the situation does come up, your brain knows how to handle it because it's already done it. So that's step one.
Real quick on the visualizations, what does that actually look like? Are you just having these people go in you know, a quiet place for say half an hour or so and just focus their mind on this? And is it when they're actually visualizing it, are they in like first person or third person? They can see themselves doing something, or is it first person where they're actually experiencing and having all those feelings and emotions?
The first time it's first person, and we usually do this. So the way it works, the way I work with our athletes is it's 15 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. So like what I'll do with them is for the first 15 minutes, I say, okay, you know, ready? Let's work on failure today, because we're talking about that, right? So, you know, we're going to push you. What are you going to say to yourself when you reach that failure point? When we push you to the point where you fall over or, you know, it's a bit uncomfortable, what are you going to say to yourself? And the actual the air quote meditation is only about 5 to 7 minutes at most, because that keeps them engaged, and that's doable for every human being. So I send them out with that, and it's in first person. And I'll give you we have a girl in our class right now. She's not a veteran, but she's got multiple sclerosis, and it attacked her really bad about 4 months ago. So now she's wheelchair bound. So the other day we were having her do it's a version of a jump rope. It's called split rope, where you're holding jump rope handles. And each hand has a rope that's about 12 inches long. So you can simulate jumping rope. And it's great for quadriplegics, people in wheelchairs, et cetera. She couldn't do it. She did not have the ability to get her hands around because her left hand is affected more than her right hand and is very uncoordinated. Her name's Kelly. So I walked over to her. I said, Kelly, close your eyes. I want you to visualize right now jumping rope. I want you to visualize what it feels like, the rope in your hand, which you have. I want you to see your wrist rolling around the way it would if you're jumping rope. Now I want you to see your elbows moving around. Now I want you to see how your shoulders would move. And I had, and she was doing it in her mind. I saw her kind of move her hands. So, okay, do you have it? Can you see it? She started nodding her head. I said, okay, stay with that for another 30 seconds. So we did that. I said, okay, come out of it. Open your eyes. jump rope. She started moving her hands. She started jumping rope.
Wow.
So therefore, like, so literally seeing herself in first person do it, she created the movement pattern in her brain. And remember, man, look, your brain doesn't know the difference. If I'm closing my eyes, visualizing holding a shiny red ball in my hand to the degree of what color it is, if it's cold, if it's warm, if it's squishy, if it's hard, if I've got that visual in my head and I can see it, the brain doesn't know the difference between actual holding it and visualization, right? So we do that. And then when they come back in, I guide them into how to incorporate that in the rest of their day. So, okay, guys, look, you already showed me that you could do this. You just proved to yourself that you have the ability to verbalize and write your own script and see yourself overcoming these obstacles, which is comfortable for most people in a gym or in the work in an environment where everybody's cheering you on, you've got motivation. Now, how are you going to do this exact same thing in your life? And I'll ask them, what's something that you're afraid to fail at, or what's something that you're afraid to do? And for most amputees, or even spinal cord injuries, it's falling, right? Yeah. You're going to fall. So how are you going to, what are you going to tell yourself when you fall and you're at home? Like, what language are you going to give yourself? What's the first thing you're going to do when you do fall? So create that visual in your head and then overcome it. And you can do the same thing for traffic. You can do the same thing for, you know, again, a hard conversation with another human being. But it's, again, it's showing them a way that they can do it in a controlled space like the gym, and then saying, look, man, you just did it. So you clearly know you can do this, which gives them confidence, and then you transition it into life. And it's been incredible.
Yeah, the power of the mind is just, the more I research it, the more I read about it, the more I study about it, it just blows. And I've known this for years too, but it's like I've just kind of renewed another interest in it, and I've been just kind of studying it lately. And it is just fascinating how powerful the mind really is. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza, but he's done yep. some research and studies. So yeah, okay, you probably know then. He had, there was a piano, a bunch of people like learning how to play the piano, and they didn't actually play the piano at all. They just rehearsed playing the piano in their mind, and they outperformed or performed equal to or outperformed people that were actually practicing the piano. And the same thing with actually lifting weights. They actually took these people in a study, and they had these people pretend like they're or go through the motions, visualize that they were actually lifting weights, and their muscles grew like 14% or whatever within, I forget the time span, but maybe a couple weeks or so. They grew 14%, which was like equal to the people that actually lifted the weights. So just visualizing it in your mind actually had the same effect or better than physically doing it in the real world, in real life.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Joe Dispenza. I actually just recently finished his 9-week online intensive course.
Wow. It's awesome, huh?
Yeah, it's incredible, man. It's incredible. And we had a guy today, he did it today and he did it earlier this week. He suffers from seizures, and he was able to breathe himself through 2 seizures this week, staying conscious the whole time.
Wow. How did that look for him?
It was good, because typically he will black out and then he'll come to and not really know what's going on. He'll be in a lot of pain, but now he's able to identify what's going on instead of just waiting for them to happen. He starts to analyze and anticipate when it's coming. And then when it happens, he knows to go right into his breath and visualization and just to hang on, not try to fight it, but just breathe through it. And it will subside much faster. And it's incredible what he's been able to do.
This episode is brought to you by Away. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/eliteman and use the promo code ELITEMAN during checkout. Is it possible to have a perfect suitcase? With my Away luggage, I think I found just that. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. All of their suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, making it both incredibly durable but also very lightweight. The interior features a patent-pending compression system, helpful for overpackers like me. They also have 4 360-degree spinner wheels, which guarantee a smooth and versatile ride, and a TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. And lastly, and probably my favorite feature of all, is their charger that comes equipped with a suitcase that'll charge your cell phone, tablet, and any other USB device like my iPhone up to 5 times from a single charge. For people like me who always have their phone dying at the most inopportune times, this is fantastic. The Away suitcase is sleek, clean, lightweight, strong, and an overall must-have when I'm on the go. I absolutely love my Away suitcase. With free
shipping to all 48 contiguous states, a lifetime warranty if anything ever breaks, and a 100-day trial period to test it out yourself. You have to take them up and get yourself an Away suitcase today. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/eliteman and use the promo code ELITEMAN during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/eliteman and the promo code ELITEMAN to get $20 off. So going back to the visualizations, and I could honestly talk about Joe Dispenza stuff all day because it is so fascinating.
Right?
It is really cool. And you know, some of the things he's doing is really incredible. He actually had people at some of his seminars just curing Parkinson's in like a couple of days. Like they'll go and do his meditations and, you know, have this retreat and shit, and they're like walking and without tremors and stuff within a few days. It's really remarkable. That's not the that's not a norm for most people, but that has happened in some of his stuff. Things like Parkinson's and other, you know, crazy diseases, which they have no cure for, he's actually seen like cures, or what you would call cures in most people's eyes. But anyways, going back to the visualization thing. So are you sure that it's third person, or is it first person? Because they're actually seeing what's happening, is like seeing what's happening to them. Is that sounds more like it's third person. And then also, after you do the visualization with them, are they doing any more visualizations throughout the day, like small, like mini ones throughout the day to kind of keep that up?
Yeah, I have them do it again when they leave, just to try to just to keep that part of their brain firing. Mm. And you're right, I'll have them. So what I do, it's a bit of both. So I have them feel it,
okay,
right, and then I have them see themselves doing it.
Gotcha.
So you go, once you can feel it, then you see yourself doing it as if it's already done.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I just wanted to be a little clear on that for the listeners. But that makes a lot of sense. That's actually kind of, I believe, how he does it as well. Dispenza, in some of his meditations, he actually has them see it, and then they step in. And actually had a guy too, Andre Spira, who was a billionaire. He was homeless. He went from homeless to being a billionaire, and from age like 20 to 35, he's now a billionaire. Really cool dude. But he did a lot of the same things with visualization and actually seeing himself, you know, become rich and get this money and stop being homeless and all this other stuff. And his visualization techniques, he actually read the book The Secret, which back in the day I actually used to think was a lot of bullshit. But the more I think about it, the more a lot of those things are really true in my belief. I think that the visualization and actually attracting those things through seeing yourself do those things is actually true. There's a lot to that. And what he talks about is actually a lot of the similar things that you're talking about right now with the visualization and actually feeling, but also seeing yourself.
Yeah, I actually listened to that interview you did with him, and that was an incredible interview.
Cool.
Yeah, and I think I watched The Secret. I watched The Secret every day for a week when it came out. I think it was like in 2005 maybe.
Wow.
And I literally started to implement some of those things and some of the things that I was doing, and like it was freaky. I was doing it in the pool, swimming laps, and something I'd never been able to do before. I was estimating to the second when I would touch the wall, and it was happening, and I was like, oh my God, what's going on?
Yeah, I actually wanted to start doing that too and kind of practicing it on my own and seeing what I can do. I know if you heard the interview, I know I mentioned like the Conor McGregor thing where he used to see the parking spots opening up. And
yeah.
I want to go back and actually see exactly what his technique is for that, so I can kind of start dabbling with that and get some good parking spots for myself to really, you know, because like I said in that interview too, once you realize you can do something small, like for him it was getting a coffee or getting a parking spot, or for you it's figuring out that, you know, the exact time that you're going to hit the pool side, and you know, once you do something small like that, you realize that anything is possible because you're literally doing that stuff with your mind and you're visualizing it into real life and real world. And even if it's something small, once you have that skill, I believe you can apply that to the biggest things, you know, the greatest things that you could ever want.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So after the visualization, you mentioned what comes after the meditation aspect of it?
Yeah. Well, you're kind of in a meditative state the entire time. So
true.
I start every athlete or every person that I work with as well with, you know, closing your eyes and getting in, just tapping into like just relaxed box breathing, diaphragmatic breath. And then once you are comfortable with the breath and you're kind of just relaxed, then you start to go into your visualization. And then you're meditating the whole time, and then it progresses. So you start with, you know, most people are afraid of failure. Like you take an amputee, they're afraid to fall, right? So you have to make them visualize that, so that you go through failure. And then I take them through something I call rehearsing responses. So rehearsing responses to emotional triggers. We all have those. You know, whether you're going to a meeting or it's that person, you're like, oh man, I got to go talk to this person today. You know they're going to set you off. But what we do, we end up creating dialogue before the event even happens. So you walk into a room pissed off already, right? Because you know how these individuals are, how the situation may be. Or if you're an introvert and you've got to go in front of a group of people, you know, or if you're an amputee or a veteran with PTS and you don't like to be around a lot of people, you can rehearse your response to that emotional trigger, and you do the exact same thing. So you go into meditation, you go into breath work, and then you rehearse your responses to those triggers. Again, seeing yourself go through it and then visualizing it as if it has already happened. So when you go into that situation, that then your probability of a negative reaction is decreased significantly.
Just to be clear, when you say you're rehearsing your responses to the negative triggers, or even going back to the failures, there's no failure or negative responses that you're actually going over in the visualizations, right? You're actually going over the positive aspects and what you would do instead of having those negative responses or failures.
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Right. Yeah, absolutely. You go back into the situation, or see the situation, and you're now creating a different narrative. And you know, it's about creating the language that you're giving, that you're saying to yourself as well. And we talk about this when I'm working with my folks in week one. You know, instead of saying, hey, you know, what are your goals, right? Like, okay, I want to be able to run a mile, or I want to get a promotion. Change the want to will do. So I will run a mile. I'm going to get a promotion by December this year. So you make it declarative and you make it definitive as if it's already going to happen. Right? So as soon as you do that with a visualization, then it starts to work better for you. That's part of what they'd use in The Secret as well. You see it, you make it definitive with your language. So you start to believe it, right? And as soon as you go into everything with this get to mentality. And I tell my folks that, you know, remember when you were little, all of our lives, right? Anytime you got to go do something, it was always fun. It was good. Like we get to go to the store today and you're going to get a toy. You get to go to grandma's house. We get to go on vacation, right? So since we could understand the word, we've associated the word get to with something good. So when you change the things that seem mundane, the things that you don't want to be doing, to get to's, then it automatically shifts you into a better mind state.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. Do you think it's better to say, I will get this by a certain period of time, I will have this by the end of the summer, I will have this, you know, by this date? Or I think some other people say it as well, like, I have this now, I have this currently, I have, do you do any of that stuff too? Like, I have this, or like you almost, like when you say, you know, the visualizations, you're feeling all those emotions. Do you ever think in terms of having it already and not like trying to get it in the future?
Yeah, I do. I agree with that. That's one of the things that Joe Dispenza does as well. You know, like you see it as if it's already there and you've already have it. Yeah. And I think that's important. But I think, you know, what I have found working with my clients and my athletes, the adaptive athletes and able-bodied athletes, is taking it back just a step with making it the I wills and I'm going to's. And then once they get that, then you have them transition into as if they already have it. So yes, definitely. But I think, you know, I think that it's more practical and people resonate with it more if you can shift the language first to will do, and then you have them go into I already have this.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense too, because it's a big leap from saying I want to have something and then saying I already have it. Like it's one of the biggest things I find tough for guys like Dispenza and other people that say that I have this now philosophy. I agree with it completely and I think it's incredible, but it is very tough for most people who have nothing of what they want to pretend or feel like they have it right now in the moment, when, you know, especially for someone who, you know, lost their leg or something, and you know, they're dealing with all that incredible turmoil, mental turmoil and just pain. It's very tough for them to be, say, grateful or feel like they have these things when, you know, they're going through an incredible amount of shit.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And you're right. Like, because you take somebody like I've worked with a couple of executives, female executives specifically, that are very high ranking in their jobs. And, you know, I've had them do the same thing. And they are so stressed out about what they're doing every day in their job and the people that they're dealing with, that if I said, hey, visualize this as if it's already happened, they don't even know how to do that.
Yeah.
Because they're in such mental stress and duress. And it's the same thing with adaptive athletes. They don't know how to do that. So if you start very, very simple, which just shifting that one word from want to will, that is, you know, that's the training wheel. That's the first step. And then you get to the visualization as if it's already happened. And that's what I do. Like when I do my 10-week program with my clients, and even with our adaptive athletes, around week four, that's when I start shifting them into visualizing it as if it's already happened.
Now that makes a lot of sense. And that, you know, that first step, like you said, I think it is a huge step, and it's a good training wheel step, as you put it. It's a good step to get them into the right direction. And, you know, you do that for whatever, 4 weeks or so, and then they can start to actually feel like those changes are happening, because those other changes are slowly starting to take place, and, you know, things are starting to look better and brighter. What is the box breathing technique you use? I'm curious, because you mentioned that earlier and you talked about diaphragmatic breathing. Can you just go over what that looks like exactly?
Yeah. So diaphragmatic breathing is simply just belly breathing. It's something that we innately do, as that we've done that since we were children. Like if you watch a toddler or a child sleep, they're doing diaphragmatic breathing through the belly. And I actually learned box breathing through Navy SEAL Commander Mark Devine from the Unbeatable Mind Academy, right? Cool. Where he talks about box breathing and how they do that in the military. So it's literally just breathing in the sequence of 3 to 4 seconds inhale, 3 to 4 seconds pause at the top, 3 to 4 seconds exhale, 3 to 4 seconds pause at the bottom. So you're just creating the box with the breath, and it's relaxed. It's not forced. And it brings about an awareness to folks. So you can do that. And a lot of times that pause enables people to, you know, if you're breathing in and you're trying to press your stomach out, the pause enables you to give yourself a little check with your hands on your belly to see if your stomach's out. And then when you exhale, you can follow the stomach as it draws in towards the spine, and then hold that inhale at the bottom. And when you hold the inhale at the bottom, when you start to breathe in, that's naturally going to make your stomach go out. So then you revert back to that natural instinctive belly breathing as we all did when we were children.
So just to be clear too, with this, it's 3 to 4 inhale, 3 to 4 pause, 3 to 4 exhale. And then was the last part a 3 to 4 rest at the very end?
Wait, no, I'm sorry. You hold a 3 to 4 second pause after the exhale.
Okay. So 3 to 4 inhale.
So yeah. Pause.
And then pause
exhale,
for 3 to 4
pause.
Seconds or no?
Yeah. Yes.
3 to 4 inhale and then 3 to 4 pause after the inhale. Right. And then 3 to 4
right.
Exhale.
Right.
And then it's a rest for 3 to 4 seconds.
And then 3 to 4 pause on the exhale. So you're holding your breath and then you inhale again.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So it's a double pause. Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's a pause in the middle and then pause at the end.
Yep.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. And that's,
and actually you asked a great question, and this is the one that I get a lot from people, especially that I don't get to see and put my hands on. Mm-hmm. And I created on my YouTube channel. I think that's the first video that I put out is how to box breathe.
it's like so simple, but, I've heard a ton of stuff about box breathing. I just kind of forgot how it goes. And I know it works, man. Breathing is so important. And, you know, there's a ton of other breaths out there. There's the Wim Hof breathing, which I love, actually. It's pretty cool. There's I've done other like mindfulness breaths and like longer breaths and holding. And there's also the Dr. Whale breath. I think it's 3, 4, 7 or something, whatever. 3 inhale, hold, and then, you know, exhale. Or 3, 5, 7. I forget exactly, but I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's so many great breaths. But the box one, it's very easy to do. It sounds pretty simple. And, you know, you're automatically going to be switching over from, I think, having that kind of anxious mindset to more of a calm and relaxed one. So especially, like you said, kids, babies do this for a reason. It's natural to us. It's how we should be breathing most of the time. But so many of us just kind of forget how to do it and get lost in the shuffle.
Absolutely. You know, and it's when you start to do the box breathing, and once you get it, you can eliminate the long hold at the top and at the bottom. You can just inhale and exhale calmly through your diaphragm, and that stimulates your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your calm, rest and digest nervous system. And I'll tell you a quick story about that. is, you know, we worked with one of our athletes who was 61 years old at the time. He was a Parkinson's patient with severe PTS. He was South African Special Forces back in the 70s, and just saw this guy saw some shit that is just inhumane. I don't even know what he dealt with. It's crazy. But he had severe Parkinson's to the fact point where when he came to us, he could not walk 20 feet. It actually took him 2.5 minutes to walk 15 feet, and then he collapsed. Wow. Because he just couldn't do it. He couldn't handle it. So we started working with him, and this is one of the first times that I noticed, I learned about how it was to breathe and shoot a weapon. Because even though this guy literally, it would take him probably a couple minutes to complete a sentence because he was stuttering so bad as well. And he was just fighting it the whole time. You could see him trying to fight it. But if he laid down to shoot his rifle at the range, he could put a group of 5 shots within a silver dollar size at 200 yards away.
Wow.
Now, as soon as he got out of that, he would start his tremors again. So we started to learn that, okay, I know you can do this if you can calm down if you start to visualize shooting. So we found that he was actually, one day we were working out and somebody called me out of the office like, Mo, you got to come. Mike is having a fit. And he was having tremors really, really bad. The music was real loud. And he was on the ground, could not stand up. So we were able to get him up. I took him outside where it was quiet. And I tried to talk him through the breathing. And he started talking about a time where he was hang gliding. And he said, look, and it took him a minute, right, to tell me, because he was having a fit and he was having tremors. He said, when I used to hang glide, everything has to be dialed in. You have a very finite amount of time, but between when you jump off the cliff and the kite hits, everything has to be calm. You've got to be exactly in the moment. So he started visualizing hang gliding. And then he did it for a moment. He did it for about 30, 40 seconds. And then he stands up. Then he walks over to a tractor tire that was over there. He's like, I want to flip this tire. I'm like, okay. So he flips the tire, walks around the tire like he's never had a tremor in his life, and flips it, and then does it 4 more times. I'm like, Mike, do you realize what you just did? And he looked at me, kind of smiled. So we found the key for him was to remember what he used to be able to do. And it all came back to breath, presence, and visualization. So I've got a video of Mike several weeks later where we also found that when he starts to have a tremor, if we lay him on his back and open up his spine into a neutral position, he can start to, it helps the tremor. So, but he would start to go into this fit and he's starting to breathe through his chest. Well, he's laying on his back and I walk over and I start talking to him and I coax him and I coach him into breathing through his stomach and breathing through his diaphragm and relaxing his mind, relaxing the space between his eyebrows. And then literally at the 40-second mark, tremors go away.
Wow.
So
that is awesome.
And that was something that he was able to repeat on a daily basis. So he took that, and then from that, he was able to start going into a restaurant or restaurants with his wife where he hadn't been able to go in 5 years, because if a waiter or a waitress dropped something or if there was a loud bang in the kitchen, he would go into a full seizure in a Parkinson's episode.
That's very interesting, dude. And Norman Doidge is I don't know if he's a neuroscientist. He might just be a regular like psychiatrist, but he studies neuroscience. But he wrote a book, and he covered like 5 or 6 different things about neuroplasticity and changing your brain and doing these incredible things. One of the guys he covered was actually someone very similar to that, to your friend Mike, who actually, through visualizing, was able to stop his tremors as well, and basically, like, almost you could say cure Parkinson's by visualizing every single day. Like his walk, he would do these walking things too, where he'd walk like miles and stuff, and that would help as well. But it was like, I believe it was through visualization and actually controlling his mind into believing that he didn't have the Parkinson's, that he didn't have the tremors, that they wouldn't affect him, that he was able to get over it as well. Does Mike have? Does he still like deal with those tremors throughout the day, or has he like drastically reduced them, or are they gone completely?
No, they're still there. They're just not as bad. Mm-hmm. And he knows how to handle them when they do come about now. So that's the big key. Like, and the crazy thing about Mike is, like, 6 weeks later, we went on a water ski trip, and he was running around the docks, talking to people, helping people, picking people out of boats, literally like nothing was wrong with him. So he learned, and he made a profound statement one day, and he sent it to me in an email. He said, you know, I know I'm not going to defeat this right now. So in accepting it and being patient and breathing through it with visualization, I know I can make it better. So instead of trying to fight it, and that's when we meet things with resistance like that, whether it's Parkinson's or it's an amputation or if it's, you know, stress, when you meet it with resistance instead of acceptance, mm-hmm. and then learn how to breathe through it, you're never unless you do meet it with acceptance, you're always going to be fighting it. But when you accept what is, and then you proceed from there, then the door opens to possibility.
Yeah, I totally 100% agree with that last statement. Accepting it allows just so much room and opportunity for growth and getting past it, as opposed to trying to resist it and fight it. You're just kind of making it worse and aggravating it, in my view. I know you have another story as well. I want to wrap things up in a couple minutes, but man, this has been an awesome interview. I know you have another story as well with helping people, maybe one or a few people who were wheelchair bound veterans, and I believe they were told that they would never walk again, that you helped them actually walk. Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's the thing that we're discovering, especially, you know, with quadriplegics or wheelchair bound athletes that have an incomplete severed spine, that they're told that, you know, you can have some spasticity, you might have some movement, but you'll never walk again. Well, man, when you tell somebody they're never going to do something again, and you happen to be in a white coat,
yeah.
and that person believes it, then that's their mindset. But when you put somebody like that around the right type of enablers, that are like, I don't know if that's true. Let's find out. Let's see what we can do. And we had one athlete that came through our program that did just that. We've had several. He was in a wheelchair. He was in the Army, and he was a mechanic working on a truck. Truck fell on him, and instant quadriplegic, severed his some vertebrae, and damaged his thoracic spine. So he was able to stand up with tremors for about 2 to 3 minutes when we first had him in our program. And through working with visualization and mindset and breathing and relaxing, we started to open that up and open it up a little bit more. And then at week 5, he was walking with a cane. And then on week 6, he was like, I want to be able to jump rope again. I used to jump rope a lot. I loved it. So we started trying to do it, and he couldn't get it. Then week 7, I have it on video, he jumps rope by himself for the first time in 5 years, I believe, 4 or 5 years. And it was incredible. And from that moment, now he would use his chair occasionally, but since that class, and that was almost 2 years ago now, he hasn't been in his chair since.
Wow. That is awesome, yeah. man. That is
and
so cool.
Here's the cool part. Let me tell you, this is the best part about that story. So this athlete came back into our program as one of our volunteer trainers. And we had another military veteran that was in a wheelchair and had a similar accident. And this athlete that I'm talking about, his name's Dan. Dan was training our new athlete, and he looks at him. He goes, hey, bro, you're going to walk one day. I promise you. And I looked at him and said, hell, let's go do it right now. And he looked at me. The athlete looked at me. He's like, what? And Dan looked at him and went, yeah, let's go. So we walked outside and put him on this this thing called a tank. It's like a sled with wheels. And got him around and got some people around him. And sure enough, he starts walking and starts pushing that sled. He pushed the sled 50 yards.
That's awesome, dude. That's so cool. So, you know, not only are you helping out these people yourself, it's you're helping these people out. Now they're helping a ton of other people out. So it's like, you know, just adding to that effect. It's really cool, man. Good for you.
Well, and listen, I got to tell you this too. Here's the thing, man. Because look, yes, these guys walked and they're still walking, but Sometimes it's not going to happen that way. Sometimes it might take years. And one of the things that I tell every one of my athletes on week one of our program is, look, I would rather you spend the next 20 years of your life giving it everything you have with every amount of visualization and possibility. And as much progress as you make in this next 20 years is that's what you're supposed to do. I would rather you do that and maybe not reach your ultimate goal versus be complacent with the fact that someone told you you're never going to do something again, and then 20 years down the road go, I wonder if, because that's the worst mistake a human can make.
No shit. And you're right. It happens just across the board with, you know, doctors when they say something, when they tell a patient that they're going to have, you know, 6 months to live if they have cancer, or they're never going to be able to cure this, or never going to be able to get past this. It's an automatic death sentence for that person. And, you know, it's the nocebo effect in action. When they tell them that's going to happen and they believe it, it's going to happen because that's all they know and that's all their subconscious brain can process.
Absolutely.
Mo, it's been a fantastic interview, man. Really do appreciate it. What is a last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience and then a place that our listeners can check out more about your work?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's what I just said. It's take the time to create a daily practice. You have to do this. High performers on every level. Wake up every morning, spend 5 to 15 minutes breathing, meditating, and visualizing what you want to achieve and what you're going to achieve for the day, and then watch it happen. And then accept where you are and build from that point. Because anything is possible if you surround yourself with the right type of people and you put your mind to it. And I fully believe that, and I've seen it happen with my own eyes on a daily basis. So make a plan, believe in yourself, visualize, and watch it work.
Love it. Awesome, man. Mo, where can our guys check out more about your work?
Yeah, you can find me. My website is brosetperformance.com. You can follow me on Instagram at @broset_performance_coaching. And then I've got a YouTube channel, which is you can just Google YouTube my name, Morris Brosset, and it's Brosset Performance.
Cool. Awesome. Mo, thanks again for coming on, brother. Really do appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely, Justin. Thank you, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do. And that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.